Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. Ren, Sam, Nick, all back here again. What's going on, guys? How are you?
Doing great, Ren. A little bit sad that the winter weather has seemed to return here in the last few days, but excited for spring for sure.
We got fake spring for a week. Nick, what do you think about Carlos Correa coming to the Twins? What was your reaction when you first heard?
Well, I woke up at 3 a.m. and I couldn't get back to sleep. And then I saw my boy Ren Clayton tweeting up a storm about it. And I was like, how the heck did this happen?
I think that was everyone's reaction. I couldn't believe it. I don't think anyone did. It's crazy. They never do this, right?
No. And of course, I mean, I'm a little skeptical because I guess there's a buyout after every year, potentially. Yeah,
it's a glorified one-year deal, basically. So
it's, say that again.
It's a glorified one-year contract. He has the power to opt out after the first year and the second year. 3 years, technically, but basically the thought is most likely he'll test the market again and try to get a massive long deal after this year. Now it only benefits him to do the 3-year deal, because if he gets hurt or if he absolutely sucks, then he can just play next year with the Twins too and then re-up and do the same thing after that season if he falls out. So it's basically protects him, but it's still good for all parties this year, right?
It's Correa and Buxton both have so many reasons to play unbelievably well this year. Because Buxton's whole contract is basically like, if you play like an MVP, you get a bunch more, right?
Yeah. Those two now together, you know, after they were linked because they were the 1 and 2 before, same draft. No, it'll be fun. I don't know. It's he was just introduced today officially, and we'll see. See how it goes. It's exciting. I mean, Twins starts in 2 weeks, so we're off and running. How's your brackets?
Yeah. Doing all right. How about yours, Sam?
I'm ashamed to admit I did not fill out a bracket for the first time in probably 20 years.
Dang, just forgot? Didn't want to?
I've just been really crazy busy, and we had some relatives visiting, and all of a sudden, like, games were on. And I was like, and I just hadn't even thought – oh, I should go fill out a bracket. Like, I had looked at it and everything, but never thought about it again.
Yeah, that happens. I mine's absolutely obliterated. It's horrible. I mean, I think I might have three of the final four teams left. But other than that, there's like, it's just terrible. I was going to go to women's one because the women's final four is here, and my office was doing a women's one. And then, I don't know, it didn't say, I had partially completed it, didn't say. And then I wanted to do it after those first four games, so I could pick up those. And those games were on Thursday, and then it locked Friday. Thursday night was St. Patrick's Day. I think someone overserved me or something, and then I just didn't finish filling it out. So, but I've been following the women's bracket even a little bit more just because of some of the implications for games here in 2 weeks. But how about you, Nick? You said yours is pretty good.
How's Paige playing?
Good. She's playing a lot of minutes now, so that's kind of what you want to see. And UConn, I mean, they won 2 days ago, but it was close. They're the 2 seed in one of their regions, so they're playing well. Star's going to have to align for her to be here for the semifinals, but they're one of the better teams.
Nice.
Are they a 1 seed or are they a 2 seed?
2 seed.
Two. Okay.
But, I mean – their record was harmed because she didn't play in December or January or most of February, so.
Yeah, some crazy upsets, though, with the women's between Iowa losing and Baylor losing to South Dakota. So
the Yotes.
You don't see every day. The Yotes.
South Dakota. I covered a couple of those players on that team when I was South Dakota, and there's like some Minnesotans as well. So that's a pretty cool story. There's this one of my favorite stories I've ever done when I was in Rapid City was on this girl that's a sophomore now starting on the team, and so it was fun to see them with like maybe the biggest upset so far, March Madness. I mean, St. Peter's also exists too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first weekend for me was, I don't know if it could have gone much better with Iowa losing, Wisconsin losing, Auburn losing, Kentucky losing. If Duke could have lost, that would have been the icing on the cake.
But did you have them all losing?
Able to beat Baylor.
You're telling me you had Kentucky losing in the first round? Yeah.
Second round, I think.
Oh, okay, that's pretty impressive. We'll see. Now we get what it starts up again. Third round starts up again Friday or Saturday. Friday, I think.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah. Okay.
Gonzaga, Arkansas is at 6. So
another Minnesotan there, Gonzaga.
Eric Musselman.
You love Gonzaga, Eric Musselman.
For the Timberwolves. He was my dream pick for the Gophers head coaching job. Apparently when they hired Richard Pitino, they were going to interview Eric Musselman, and they decided not to.
And you're forever thinking, what if?
Just a classic Minnesota move, yeah. Just add it to the list.
Yeah. That's true. All right, should we get to it?
Let's do it.
Okay, our documentary that we are reviewing today is called Slaying the Badger. It's a cycling Tour de France documentary directed by John Dower. It came out first in July 22nd of 2014. And it's about two rival cyclists in the 80s. Kind of takes place right before the steroid era in cycling, which lasted for several, I guess. Greg LeMond is the main character. He's an American, and arguably, well, he still is now, I guess. Actually, when this was produced, at least, he was the only American to win the Tour de France after Lance had been stripped for roids. And then it focuses on Greg LeMond and his rivalry and friendship and, you know, relationship with Bernard Hinault. Who is also known as the Badger. This is his nickname, so that's where the title comes from. It's actually based off a book, which we mentioned last time, about this same topic. It just kind of gives the ins and outs of kind of team cycling and broke down that, explained a lot to me about how that works and how it's both a team and individual sport at the same time. And it talked about the 1986 Tour de France, where it was supposed to be Greg LeMond's kind of carved route to winning the Tour de France, because he was on the same team with Hinault, and there was some going back and forth on what was said, what was the plan, how they were going to help each other and not help each other, and a lot of drama, maybe some backstabbing, stuff like that, and just a lot of conflict and stuff like that. In and around that race, Greg LeMond ultimately did win, and then Hinault kind of said, "Yeah, I did. I let him win after the fact, like kind of a little baby in the playground." so that's kind of what happened. I'm gonna issue an apology for how little I knew how the Tour de France even works. My whole life, I've been like, "Oh, this is such a great spectacle," and I would watch it hardly. I was always confused by it, and I take pride in, you know, kind of understanding how a lot of the more arbitrary and smaller sports work in the ins and outs and the rules and stuff. And I mean, this was like, I think I learned the most from this documentary of any 30 for 30 that we've watched, and that's kind of saying something. So Sam, what did you think of this documentary? What was your experience?
That's a bold statement, that you learned the most from this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't disagree. It's definitely in the top 10 for me. I always wondered why at the end of every leg of the Tour de France, they weren't like sprinting to try to win it. And it's because It's based on total time. And now that makes a lot more sense.
And total time, right? It seems so obvious now. I mean, it's not a difficult, complicated system. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. but I guess I was viewing it more like every day was a race that you're trying to win. And yeah, like you, I don't know much about cycling. I watched it when Lance Armstrong was a big deal back in the day, and I touch on him a little bit, but I like this a lot. I think like the more random, not necessarily football, baseball, basketball ones.
The niche ones.
The niche ones. They're really interesting. And it was also just a very unique one in that I don't know if we've seen a documentary where there's more like contradicting statements or interviews where almost every single time that somebody told a story or said, this person said this to me or this person did this, somebody else would come on in an interview 20, 30 seconds later and almost basically completely disagree with that statement. Like, no, I didn't say that, or I did it for this reason and not this reason. And I just thought that that was really fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of like they were still, you know, to go back to like your example, Ren, I think like, you know, there were still like little boys about it. There, you know, everybody was stuck in their ways. Everybody was still viewing things through the same lens. Greg LeMond was still, you know, very much like, woe is me, and his wife was there too. And is Greg LeMond the one, can you guys remind me, was he the one former cyclist that when, before Lance was popped with, you know, his doping, was he the one that always came out and was very, very vocal about like against Lance? Do you remember that?
I don't know that.
I don't know. They did allude to it a little bit at the end, so you could be right. They said that he said it's unbelievable, and then he like no commented the rest of the way. But he could have maybe said more too. That's a good question.
I remember that there was this like an older biker that was always talking smack about Lance, and I was like, you know, it just appeared to me like as like an old guy who just wanted to still relive the glory days, and like seeing him in this documentary, it made it seem like he's still that way, and I was just kind of trying to connect the dots, and I feel like it was him. And so then at the end of the documentary, when they were like, oh yeah, I was really like all I said was it's unbelievable, and I was really like, you know, took the high road type of an idea that he was trying to say, I was like, that's, you know, very questionable if this is the same guy that I'm thinking of. And it just seemed like, you know, he was going to control his narrative anyways.
He was very insistent on controlling the narrative, that even in the interview. I mean, I wrote it down many times. His wife was so candid, and they did most of the interviews together. She was like, oh yeah, and then we were like this, and he was like, whoa, keep your thoughts down, you know, he's like trying to be like, hey, pump the brakes, and she's like, oh, we hated that, and he was like awful, and we were like, and we felt so betrayed, and he's like, no, we were cool, whatever.
And she was like, I vividly remember you being really upset about this, and he's like, no.
So it was great. You could see like kind of the reality, you know, versus just an angle someone was thrown at you. So yeah, that was awesome. Let's talk about the production just real quickly. It was not narrated. It had a lot of text on the screen, which actually I thought, I was a little hesitant at first, but I thought it worked pretty well, especially for explaining kind of the basics of some of this strategy I didn't understand before. There was some awesome, sorry, I can't hear you.
I was just gonna say, and some of it needed to be translated because he was speaking French. So
yeah,
that kind of flowed nicely.
It worked, yeah, they had the translator and there was no hiccup. There were some great beauty shots of France and the mountains that I really liked.
Yes, it was unbelievable. That was a note that I took for sure. How scenic it was.
So good. Some interesting graphics on the screen, like we mentioned, but overall, I like the production. I was kind of surprised how much I liked it for kind of the style they had.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, about the whole event, Ren, like you were surprised with like how it scored and like all of that. I was surprised with like the terrain and everything, and just seeing some of those, you know, hairpin turns and like the switchbacks. And I guess I haven't paid attention to it enough, but I mean, some of that is, you know, would be hard to drive on, let alone have a bike, and then you're racing, and it's just, I mean, no wonder. I mean, it, you know, it makes sense seeing it, just like you were saying, it makes sense with the time trial type of an idea, but you know, just seeing it in this documentary, I felt like, you know, just gave a new perspective or a new appreciation for it.
And they're absolutely flying on the skinniest tires going around all these corners. There's literally thousands of fans that are so close that some of them are tapping the riders on the back as they're going by.
Yeah, like, that made me uncomfy. I didn't like that. If I was one of them, I would be like, get off of me. Don't touch me.
For sure. Just how scary, like I would be so scared that one of them would just step out, like a little kid runs out and you run them over and you lose the tour. Yeah.
Someone pushes you a little and then there's someone in the way and then there's a motorcycle right next to you and you bump into them, there's a car. And
there's a 1,000-foot cliff to your left.
I mean, I don't know, it's weird. But it was cool kind of see the birth of it too. Just briefly, they kind of gave a context. It was just promotion back in like 1902 or something. And how it came about. I thought they did a good job of kind of weaving and keeping us in suspense, of because they had teased before, like how there was this cool moment at the end of this race in 86, and then there was this betrayal right after. It kind of led up to that whole thing during the whole documentary, but it wasn't kind of, it didn't feel unnatural, which it could have, because they were kind of leading up to this climax, but it was done well and it was interesting and they did some tangents, but not too long. So I thought structurally and the format was impressive, I found. I thought Paul Coakley, the coach, who is kind of one of the villains, looked exactly like John Malkovich, so that was weird. And he kept making a weird sound with his fake teeth, and I didn't like that.
I didn't notice that. I'm glad I didn't.
He was like a villain. It was so funny. And because he was one of the guys where they were like, we have video of you saying the plan was to have Le Mans win in 86. Then he's like, no, we didn't.
That's not how I actually felt about it or something.
Yeah. So it was just drama, frustrating. I mean, obviously made for a good movie. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, they had a lot to work with. And I ultimately, one of the reasons why I think it's, and ultimately give it a pretty high score when we do, is because oftentimes there is almost a good subject matter, but then there are things that take away that they do or cannot get or whatever. And there was just none, for me, there was no really like, oh, they didn't get, like they got Hino to do an interview. Like they, that was like one of the things I, at first I thought they weren't gonna go get him, because, you know, it was, makes him look bad pretty much. All the guys that it makes look bad, they interviewed, and it was well-rounded. I didn't think it seemed too slanted. They all kind of looked bad at sometimes. And they didn't do a whole bunch to take away from the good story that they had. Anything else that we need to really touch on?
I thought it was really interesting to hear about how America kind of got into cycling and how it wasn't a big deal at all. And then what's his name? The American? Why am I blanking?
Le Mans.
Yeah, Le Mans got into it with his dad and started doing all these amateur races and realized he was amazing at it and basically moved to Europe and started this journey. But it was just really interesting to hear how America had nothing to do with it for a little while and then started to experience some success. And then Europeans weren't really huge fans of Americans coming in and winning the thing. So a cool aspect of it for sure.
I liked how he had his other buddy that was also an American that joined the team, that was like so humble that he was never a threat to try to be skeevy like he noted. So he was just, he's like, I knew I could never win. For one moment I thought, oh, like, because the coaches were trying to like turn him against each other, and he's like, oh no, I knew, you know, I'm not nearly good enough, so I never even had to consider, you know, screwing my buddy over like he know did. But that was hilarious. It was like literally like his the best friend in a movie. Like this is like a, I don't know. There's so many like.
It was like Talladega Nights with Cal Naughton Jr. and
yeah,
Ricky Bobby.
So good. Also, this he lives in Minnesota now. Apparently, at the very beginning, they had said Minnesota on the screen, and then they go to his house. So I think he lives in Minnesota. I forgot to look that up. I'm gonna have to do that. Lamont.
Huh. Wow.
At least he did in 2014. But yeah.
Lamond was the guy that was talking smack about Lance Armstrong and Floyd Landis like four different times. And
really?
Yeah.
I guess that's not surprising.
Yeah, I was looking at his Wikipedia here, and then he lived in Wayzata. He was driving through winter in icy conditions when going to his dentist, and that's when he got in the car accident.
Yeah, that was really like a eye-opening way to start the doc. It was just him just in this massive brace explaining accident.
I know. I'm sure the documentarians were like, oh, great. We have to explain how why he's wearing this weird thing outside his shirt this whole time.
And then his they lived in Medina until 2017, and then they moved to Tennessee.
Weird. So,
yeah.
Okay, I'll give my rating first. That kind of leads into what I had for my my note on my rating. So it's I'm going to go with 8.7 weird torso braces. He's wearing that thing outside his shirt in every interview. An elaborate brace. 8.7 is pretty high. It's very high for me. I just compared it against the other ones like I always do. And it's hard to remember some of them, obviously, but I just obviously learned so much in this one. Like I said, I was just interested. I was considering, you know, splitting it up, maybe watching half. And it was late at night. I just watched it. It was an hour and 18 minutes and it felt much shorter, really. And they had so much drama. It had great, I don't know. Yeah. Good stuff all around for all the reasons I said before. I really liked it. So 8.7. I just feel so well-versed now. How about you, Sam?
I really liked it as well. Something that I didn't mention earlier that I really enjoyed about the doc was that it wasn't all about doping. And I think that cycling is really interesting, but has gotten darkened, I guess, trying to find the right word, by doping. And like that's all that anyone talks about when you hear about it. It's either Lance Armstrong or doping or both at the same time, obviously. And so it was refreshing to, you know, see the Tour de France in its heyday, like see it thriving and seeing all the people so excited about it and to see how Americans got into it in the first place. I really like that. The beautiful scenery. I just find myself being like, man, I want to go travel there. And
same.
Yeah. And so I'm going to go with 8.17 contradictions just because, like I said, it was one of the something I'll remember about this doc was just how opposite everyone viewed the same events.
Two things I wanted to mention before my rating. How did we not talk about his gunshot story?
Oh, yeah.
His brother-in-law shoots him.
No kidding.
That was terrible. His brother-in-law accidentally shot him with a bunch of, you know, buckshot or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Well, they're hunting.
They showed the x-ray and how it's all over still and they're not able to get it out. And something about how now he can't bike, right?
He says it deteriorates or something.
He's lead poisoning.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's the crazy thing. Is he won two more, right? Like that was an amazing comeback after, you know, being shot. And then he 2 years after, 3 years after his first Tour de France, he won another one. And like, so there's just too much for them to do. So they had to just have that be a little part of the movie. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
How did we get this far into the pod?
Forgot.
And then, excuse me, then we were talking about some of the interviews and how they're contradictory, but I felt like there was also some random interviews too. Like, why are we interviewing the masseuse or the masseur? And I was waiting for her to play a bigger role in all of this and maybe talk about like doping because she saw people, you know, behind the curtain or something. And I feel like she just played a very minor role.
Yeah. You know what that was? They worked really hard to find her. They found her in San Bernardino or whatever. And they're like, yeah, we got the masseuse. And then she gave them nothing. She gave them like the most boring interview. And they're like, we got to put it in. We spent so much time.
And they put a transition, right? Like you said, they put a transition in and like, oh, this is in, you know, wherever in California. And then had like the nice wave picture or videos. I mean, geez.
Yeah, that might have been shoehorned in there, I guess, a little.
Yeah, someone had a vested interest, but anyways, I'm gonna give this a 7.5. Ren stole my rating. TLSO braces.
What's it called? Because,
TLSO. It's a thoracic lumbar sacral orthosis. So it's just the different levels of the spine that it blocks or that it immobilizes ideally. So
okay. Yeah. Wait, what was your number? What did you give it?
7.5.
Okay. Great.
Awesome. Yeah, that I couldn't take my eyes off of that every interview that he had. And then I had to laugh too, because he's like slouching in it and it's like clearly that's not doing what it's supposed to be doing and you're slouching, but it's trying to immobilize it, but you know, whatever. So just a little PT in me.
You're just like, this guy's a clown. He doesn't even know how to heal right. All right.
Give us 8.12, which puts it 14th out of 60.
Another top 15 that we've had, like three top 15s in a row, I think.
Yeah, we're crushing it right now.
We really are. Okay, we're going to do Mount Rushmore. And this is going to be a little bit different than some of the other ones we've done. It's more topical, it's more current. We're just gonna do current NFL quarterbacks with some parameters. The thinking is, I've just been thinking about the quarterback situation in the NFL. Every time I think about it, it's just so interesting. I feel like, you know, some people have retired, some people have unretired, a lot of people have moved. It's just like, it almost feels like it's worse than it was like 5 years ago as far as talent, but maybe it isn't, I don't know. Anyway. Let's just do Mount Rushmore, current NFL quarterbacks, not based on who they have around them. So it's like, it's basically like start your franchise with, but not for like a franchise. So that way we can throw out age. So like basically just take this guy and try to win one season with him. Has to be an active player, but doesn't matter his receivers or O-line or anything. Just taking him by himself. Nick goes first, then me, then Sam. So Rudy, what do you got?
This is the one win the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Probably Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. It's harder than it seems. I mean, even to take number one overall, like I feel like a couple years ago, it'd be even easier. But Patrick Mahomes. See, I don't even know if I would have taken him first. I don't think I would have. Weirdly.
Oh, snap.
I still don't even know who I want.
This is such a struggle for Red right now. You can just see
Lamar Jackson.
Oh, what?
I
probably could have gotten him in the second round, but I would rather have him, to be honest. And he's had more up and down, ups and downs, but obviously my other pick, I was going between him and Rodgers. So. Sam?
Wow, that's a hard disagree for me. I don't even know if Lamar Jackson's in my top 10.
I wouldn't have picked him at all, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
You could have gotten him fourth round.
What?
I gave you so many quarterbacks I'd rather have, I think, right now. I really like Lamar Jackson.
No, you don't. You don't. You're saying that.
All right. At least five I could name ahead of him.
Yeah, name one then.
Name two.
Yeah. All right. Josh Allen, I'll take. With the third pick, he outdueled Patrick Mahomes in the playoff game.
No, but see, that was because he had a better team. Josh Allen. I would never pick Josh Allen in this game. But hey.
Wow, we're just disagreeing with each other right now.
We're gonna fight. We need a new podcast.
Get us a new podcast, guy. Host. You want to call it? Call Ren. Guy, host.
All right, who's next, Sam?
Now you got me thinking about this too much. Oh, man. Okay. I mean, for one season, I'm going to go with Tom Brady.
Fair. Yeah.
How do you not take the greatest winner of all time? How did you pick Lamar Jackson over Tom Brady?
No, I am still confident in that. I'm not confident in taking him over Rodgers, who's still on the board. But, oh, it's my turn?
Who are you going with?
Rodgers. He should not have dropped, and it's my bad for dropping him, but.
I mean, he's had such good playoff performances lately.
There it is.
Yeah, well, that's part of the reason I didn't take him, to be honest.
And Lamar Jackson's had better? No.
Yeah. I
know. Yeah, I was debating between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, too. But with Tom Brady just retiring, I think he's just in it for the money this year. So,
really? I mean, he has all the money. I don't think it's not.
Just making an inflation joke. All right. So we have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes.
Now is when it gets tough.
Mm-hmm. It gets interesting. And this game would be completely different if we needed him for 3 years, too. Because there's a few of these guys that you throw out, you know?
Oh, yeah. You throw out Tom Brady, for sure.
I guess we haven't said him yet, so I'll just wait.
Probably Matt Stafford.
Oh, okay. That's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah, I mean, after a Super Bowl, a little easier to say, I guess, but... between veteran or been in the league for a long time, you know what you're going to get out of them type of a deal. I don't feel like greatest about it because he is turnover prone and that, but I'm just kind of looking at other things. And then I'll probably go Russell Wilson after that. Even though I don't like Mr. Unlimited.
Somebody's called.
He called. That's his alter ego.
Ren, you don't remember that video when he signed his contract?
No, but I'm disappointed that I'm hearing about it because it's just so lame.
Oh, it's such a cheesy video. Like
that sounds like classic Russell Wilson.
So, yeah, it is.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, my turn. I got Lamar Jackson. I got Aaron Rodgers. I got to go Joey Burrow.
Good call.
My team is stacked, guys. Man.
Yeah, you just got who you should have taken in the first round and your third round.
Why didn't you take him as the first round guy? So you have Allen and who? And Brady.
Just the greatest of all time.
Yep.
Okay, I think this is tough. Now it's getting tough. You got Dak on the board. Jameis Winston on the board.
Mitch Trubisky just signed, didn't he?
Yeah, that's true. Man. All right. I'm going to go with Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
He has shown a ton of potential. Dynamite. Him and Josh Allen are basically like the same as far as just freaky.
That's the pick I don't hate, actually. Well, I didn't hate the Brady pick, dude.
All right. Good to hear. And my last pick is going to be – I guess I'll take Kyler Murray. I'm not a huge Kyler fan, but He's a good player, at least at the beginning of the year. By the end of the season, he's always like dead somehow. But
that was gonna be my pick. Yeah, I am a Kyler Murray fan. He has an issue with just making quick decisions that are not bad, but I like him. I think he'll be good eventually. Okay, my last quarterback. This is who I want on my team, so I'm not gonna pick a certain Cleveland guy. A new Cleveland guy.
I didn't even think about him.
Yeah. Well, he's not. Yeah. Man. Sorry. There's some fun ones that I want to pick, but I'm just gonna go with. Who was I just gonna? Oh, Dak. I'll go with Dak.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott. I've never really been a huge fan of him, but he's probably the best guy left on the board, I think.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, you know, you can't go wrong there.
All right, who you got? Yeah, it's tough now.
Yeah.
See, like 5 years ago, we would have never run out of picks. You know, we've been like, oh, I wish I could get this guy too.
Yeah.
But like here in the last round, we're like scraping.
I think the problem is that we have a ton of young quarterbacks right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's kind of that next generation turnover.
Of like, are they going to be good or aren't they?
Yeah.
Justin Fields and Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trey Lance.
I mean, I wanted to just for fun thinking, but you can't. Cause like, I mean, you can, but I don't know. He's.
I mean, part of me wants to pick Jimmy G because he's been there before. He's actually won. But, I mean, you know. There's Kirk Cousins there, Derek Carr. I feel like I'd rather have Derek Carr over Kirk Cousins for like winning.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And then there's like Tannehill and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz probably below Carr. Tannehill is like, he can be streaky. What did you say?
Carson Wentz below a lot of people for me.
Right. Apparently. But I'm just kind of going through. I'm just looking at a list here.
Carson Wentz must be so unlikable. Every like team he leaves, they're just like, see ya.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. I don't know.
It used to be the opposite, it seems like. I don't know.
Right, that's why I don't understand what his deal is. But, yeah, I'll probably go Derek Carr.
Okay.
Fair enough.
All right. So who's left? We got like Jameis Winston. Tua. Justin Fields.
Matt Ryan's a decent one.
Matt Ryan, Deshaun Watson. Who's a Panthers QB? Is it
Darnold still?
Sam Darnold?
Still?
I don't think it's going to be at the beginning of the season. I don't know.
No, they'll either draft someone or make an emergency trade for Kirk, hopefully.
Who else is on the board? Mentioned Fields. Goff. who's the Texans quarterback now?
Davis Mills.
He might be the, like, Mr. Irrelevant of the quarterbacks.
Yes, probably. He's up there. All right, we did Mount Rushmore of 1 year NFL quarterbacks. Rudy with the first pick, Patrick Mahomes, no surprise there. Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson, and Derek Carr. Ren reached for Lamar Jackson. Then you have Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, and Dak Prescott. And I took Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Justin Herbert, and Kyler Murray.
All right. Very good. That's fun.
Ren recovered well after a reach first round.
Come on, man. I honestly don't feel like I reached. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks. I mean, he's one of the best. I don't know. I also think
plays hero ball.
Oh, please.
He needs to sign a contract. So he doesn't destroy himself and not have $150 million.
What is his deal right now?
He's his own agent. So he represents himself. Do you guys know this?
No.
I don't think I did.
Yeah, so he doesn't have an agent, and so he like wasn't negotiating during the season because he was focused on playing. But he plays a style of football that's like kind of scary and could get injured at any moment. And we just saw Deshaun Watson get like a deal worth $230 million guaranteed. So it's kind of crucial he gets this done.
Well, know? Is he going to be a free agent at the end of this year? Or?
I think he's playing his fifth-year option this next year. So he'll make like good money this next year, but not $230 million guaranteed, you know, long-term stability.
Yeah. Hmm.
So it's kind of fascinating.
How did no one take Flacco?
Good question.
Hmm. I asked the
good question. Daniel, the all-time backup quarterback.
Fitzpatrick.
Hmm.
Magic.
Yeah. Alrighty. Sam, do you have a perhaps documentary wish list, a doc you'd like made?
Yes. This one is a selfish doc wish list because I'm a big NFL draft fan. Who's new would be talking so much about the NFL on March 23rd?
Yeah.
But with the NFL draft coming up, I think a documentary on the original draft analyst Mel Kiper would be pretty interesting or very boring. I don't really know. But definitely, it would be interesting to see how he was one of the original pioneers of the draft, and it went from something that was not a big deal at all to now there's coverage on it year-round. It's a big spectacle. So the NFL hosts it at one of their franchise cities, and you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people show up and party and try to figure out what their team's going to do. And so but that all started back. Mel Kiper, I listened to his podcast, his NFL draft podcast, and he talks about how, like, at the beginning, he was literally just like calling around to local scouts and trying to figure out, trying to piece together this NFL draft board that he always does. And I think it'd be really interesting to get his opinion on that and, you know, hear how he started it all, because now, obviously, you can just go and Google any prospect's name and find thousands of them. But back then you had nothing like that. And so he was pretty much starting from scratch. And so I think he would have some amazing stories to tell, and he's just a charismatic character. So that's my idea.
Nice. Yeah. How many decades has he been doing? Like,
I want to say since like the late 70s, early 80s or something.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how he got in, because he filled a need, right, kind of, and then, and now it's more that he's just the expert, and he was there first, and he has the monopoly on it, which, and not really anymore, but he's just the longest tenured guy, and how it's just changed all around him.
Right, and yeah, he went from, like, probably hardly being able to pay his bills to now he probably makes $5 million plus a year, who knows how much, but it's just wild to think about.
Have you ever been to an NFL draft, Sam?
No.
Would you want to, or is it too, would you not want to?
Oh, I definitely would want to, just for the experience of it.
Yeah.
But it's only recently become a big deal that it's going to different places. Before it was always at, what is it? Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
Radio City Music Hall in New York. So, yeah, I would love to at some point. They're talking about maybe having it in Green Bay at some point. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I think at some point it'll probably be at every NFL
franchise. Do you know where it is this year? Not sure where it is. I always feel like it's in the middle of the country since it's left New York. But
It is in Vegas. Oh, because it was supposed to be in Vegas last year, I think, and then it got canceled.
Yeah.
And not enough people could go or something. So
Vegas. Sweet. Very good. May? That it NFL draft is?
April 28th.
Oh wow. So like 1 month. Sam, do we have what our next documentary that we are gonna review is?
Yes, we do. It is episode 63. It's called Playing for the Mob, from October 7th, 2014. It's how Mafia associate Henry Hill orchestrated a point shaving scheme involving Boston College basketball, narrated by Ray Liotta, who portrayed Hill in Goodfellas.
I've never seen Goodfellas, but so I didn't know it had like a sports fixing tie-in or anything. Interesting. Okay, that'll be interesting. Rated around college basketball during March Madness as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good rest of your days and weeks.